Welcome to the History Hotline, a direct line to a better understanding of all things Black history and beyond. Welcome to another episode of the History Hotline. My name is Deanna Lynn Cook, and as always, I will be your host today. Now, today is quite a special episode. It's an episode that has been a long time coming and actually would have probably been in your ears earlier this year. By earlier, I mean as early as January 2024, had it not been for several technical, legal, political challenges that we faced along the way in putting out an episode such as this. We are thinking about immigration, as we do a lot on this podcast, and I am joined by a special guest who will join me in interview later on in this episode, Hannah Gaffey, who was first on this episode in episode 14 and has been a long time friend to me and of the show, supporting in its many endeavours over the years that this show has been running. And Hannah came and spoke on this podcast, episode 14, all about immigration. And I've since done other episodes about immigrations, looking through some of Britain's acts and laws, and also in recent times thinking about the way that immigration is used as a political tool, specifically in kind of far-right political circles, and the way it's been used currently in Britain, especially with events over the past summer. So all that being said, Hannah was travelling to Jamaica last year, November 2023, where she was on a plane that she realised a man was being deported. She was flying to Jamaica from London and realised the deportation was about to happen. And so this episode will be about what happened, you know, what she did when faced with a 9-hour flight with a man on the back row being restrained by six security personnel. We speak about the aftermath of that as it happened last year, November. There's nearly a year of distance between the event and now. The media's response to it, the far right's response, some of the things that she had to deal with in her personal life and online, the hatred, as well as the support, and also kind of context of immigration in today's society, in the context of this new government we have and some of the laws that they're bringing in and some of the laws they're getting rid of from the old government in regards to immigration. And this idea and this framing that immigration is a problem and something that needs to be solved and stopped and removed, as opposed to looking at it with any kind of positivity. I am here in this country as a result of immigration, as are many of you that are listening and many of the people that you might know in your life. So yeah, an interesting all-round episode. I am going to introduce Hannah. Hannah's going to introduce herself, actually. And then we're going to get into kind of what happened and the aftermath, but there will be clips in this episode that come from earlier this year and last year, some of the storytelling is from the time, because as I said, we recorded this episode multiple times and due to different technical and legal issues, we just didn't feel that it was right to put it out. We couldn't put it out at certain points, and so here we are talking about it in October 2024. But I am joined by the incredible Hannah Gaffey.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. We were joking earlier for the audio listeners. I don't think there'll be any video listeners. I'm wearing a gaming headset, which is my partner's gaming headset, to record this episode. So I look deranged, actually.
But you look like you would be better placed. You look like, you know, the people that are going to like signal the plane off.
Yes.
From the tower with all the big headset, the like muffler earphones, the like, and yep, we're going to have the flight 9071 going off to Barcelona. Yep, that can go now. Off you go.
Like, that's go, me. Go, go. Well, speaking of flights. No.
Hannah, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are. For those who haven't listened to your first episode on the History Hotline, tell the people who you are and what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah. So the first time I came on, we spoke a bit about like immigration policy in general in the UK and historically, because at the time, I think I just finished my master's degree, which was my like master's project was about people seeking asylum in the UK and their access to services, for example, higher education, because I did a degree in education. So I have like a general interest in immigration, like in general, but specifically in the UK and specifically people who have come to the UK as refugees or asylum seekers. So that's kind of me. And I'm very left wing. So that can nice. Sometimes get me into trouble, which I guess is why we are here today.
Absolutely. There is nothing wrong with being left wing. If you're going to be left wing anywhere, this is the podcast for it. So do not worry about that. So, Hannah, essentially, as the story goes, or as maybe if you're listening as a member of the general public who is somewhat in tune with things that happen in the world, you may or may not know. I think maybe may not, actually. I think unless you're tapped into certain media outlets, right-wing media outlets, I actually don't know how far this story would have reached. And actually, it would be quite interesting if you are listening to let me know how far, if this story reached you at all. But essentially, Hannah, you were boarding a flight last year, November, and you were heading from the UK to Jamaica. And once you were in the kind of boarding area of that flight, you realised that a deportation was going to happen on this flight.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, as I said, we really did record this episode a while back. And so we're going to take that kind of original recording of Hannah telling the story of what happened on this flight so that you can kind of understand what happened and also I'm sure she remembered it better back then in January than she would do now. Like
absolutely.
Nine months down the line. brilliant. So let's roll the tapes.
Yeah. So I was going on holiday to visit a friend who lives in Kingston. And we, you know, got called to the gate over an hour before our flight. And we went through like the gate checks, like when they check your passport and boarding card really quickly. It was really efficient. I was surprised. Usually the airport is never efficient. And then the plane was there on the runway. And then we were sat waiting to board for probably over an hour, which was obviously approaching the flight takeoff time. And I was confused as to why it was taking so long, because the plane was there, we were there, all what that was left to do was for us to get on the plane, and that wasn't happening. And we had an announcement that said something like, they're just making final checks of the aircraft, sorry for the delay, that kind of usual airport chat. Then I saw someone with a high-vis vest on that said Immigration Heathrow, I believe, which was strange because we were in Gatwick. so that was confusing. And basically straight away I was like, oh, immigration. Is someone being deported on this flight? Which is like maybe not the first thing that people would think of. But given like the Home Office's history on deportations to the Caribbean, it was the first thing that I thought of. And also, instead of calling out, you know how they have like boarding group numbers, instead of calling those out, they called a specific three rows of people that were towards the back of the plane. And they said, can these three rows of people come and board the plane first? And then after that, they started calling the, you know, group one, come on board, group two, come on board. But at this point, all of this was like made up in my head that someone was getting deported on my flight. Like I had no evidence. So I Googled what to do. And I found some resources that I think we can talk about later. And it basically said you need to determine, like you need to get the facts of whether someone is actually being deported on your flight. So I went to the person who'd like scanned our boarding passes, and I just said, hi, is someone going to be deported on this flight? And she paused for like half a second and then just went, yes. And I was like, oh, okay. So I think probably just said, okay, thanks, and then turned around and went and sat back down in my seat, cried, which wasn't the most helpful response. But this was, none of this is on the plane. This is all like preparing to get on the plane. Yeah. And then people were staring at me because I was crying, for no apparent reason. So I just started telling people that someone was getting deported on the flight. Yeah, so whilst I was sort of crying and telling people that someone was getting deported on the flight, they were calling the group numbers, and we were group 7. So that's like probably, I think it's like the last boarding group. So I was just like waiting for the boarding group to be called. But at the same time, I didn't really want to get on the flight. Because I felt like I was then supporting the deportation by getting on the flight. But then I also realized that if I didn't get on the flight, then there's like no one else knows this is happening really, except me and like a couple of people who were sat around me, and who had said, obviously, I told them what was happening. So then I called one of my friends who's like familiar with the hostile environment, and I needed to call someone who would like give me advice basically. And we just chatted for a bit. This is also while I'm like stood up getting ready to board the plane. And we just agreed that I needed to like get in touch with a mutual aid group or something that like already works on like trying to stop deportations. So I called one of those, and I just said like, I don't really know why I'm calling you because it's too late. Like I'm about to step on a flight where someone's getting deported. But I'm just letting you know that this is happening. I'm in Gatwick. This is a flight number. We're going to Kingston. Like I just told them like the basic facts. And then I got on the flight. And when I was, you know, when you're at the door of the plane and you're in like the little tunnel thing, to the right there was someone with a Home Office high-vis jacket on, kind of standing there with his arms crossed, like just staring into space, looking very serious. And I was like, okay, it's definitely a deportation if the Home Office is here. And what I'd read online is from a organisation called Lesbian Gay Support the Migrants, LGS Migrants. And they have this campaign called See It, Say It, Stop It, I believe. That's what the campaign is called. And it's about stopping deportations and what you should do. And they basically advised in those sets of instructions that you should just let as many people as possible know that a deportation is happening on the flight. And you should let the staff on the plane know that you're uncomfortable with like the fact that this is happening. So as soon as I got to the plane door and there was a member of cabin crew there, I said to her, is there someone being deported on this flight? She said, yes. I said, can British Airways guarantee the safety of this person upon their return to Jamaica? And she said, this is nothing to do with me, basically. You know, I'm just a member of cabin crew. This is the Home Office. Like, you know, this is not my responsibility. And I said, okay. And then she referred me to a member of ground staff at Gatwick, and I asked the same question. And she also said, you know, this is a Home Office. This is nothing to do with us. But he's sat at the back of the plane, so you can go and talk to him if you like, but I wouldn't recommend it because he's not really a happy bunny. And I was like, right, okay, not sure what that means, but cool. I also might not be a happy bunny if I was being deported. So at this point, I then walked to my seat, which is also at the back of the plane because I was in economy. And I went to the back. And obviously at this point, I was probably like 8 to 10 rows in front of the person being deported, who I now know he's called Lawrence. So I'll refer to him as Lawrence from this point onwards. I could see him, and he was being physically restrained by 6 members of staff. At the at that point in time, I was like, are these Home Office staff? I don't understand who these people are. He was being restrained by these members of staff. And I've since found out that it's usually like a third party, like security company who does these, like the physical handling of people. And it's usually a company called Mighty, but it's also, it's been G4S previously as well. So he was being physically restrained. And obviously he was saying things like, get off me, don't touch me, that kind of thing. And once I got to my seat, I said to the people around me, this man's been deported. They're planning on pinning him down like that for 9+ hours whilst we're all sat on this flight. Do you think that that's a good idea? So I basically went with the less of the human rights side of the argument, but more of the logistically, is it a good idea for 6 people to pin somebody down for a 9+ hour flight whilst there's hundreds of us thousands of miles in the air? And people were kind of like, oh yeah, no, that doesn't sound like a good idea. There were some people filming. There was a few of us stood up and just sort of watching what was going on. And then eventually everyone sat down apart from me and one other man who was in the row behind me. And the cabin crew were obviously coming up to us and telling us to sit down. The cabin crew were also telling the people who were recording not to record and put their phones away.
Why were they telling you not to record? Was there a particular reason?
I think it's a general privacy thing, because I've actually noticed that on some planes now, they do when they do the safety instructions at the start of the flight, they also do an announcement like, please do not record people, which I actually agree with, because I've been in the background of TikToks before from just walking around London. At this point, I can't really remember the exact order of events, but me and this man behind me, we stay standing up and we say you can't do this. Why is there 6 people holding this man down? That kind of thing. And the cabin crew were like, just sit down. Obviously, at this point, other people were getting agitated, because if you stand up on a flight, they can't take off. You need to be seated, obviously, with your seatbelt on. So people were getting annoyed and then would say stuff like, oh, well, they'll just put him on the next flight anyway. Or someone in a few rows in front of me were like, he's probably a criminal. So, just sit down and shut up, basically. At that point, I was quite concerned that both of us would get thrown off the flight ourselves. Also because what the head of cabin crew was like, she actually said this to me. It is not word for word, but she said something along the lines of, if you're not careful, you'll be deported in a minute, which I thought was interesting, because I was like, are you deporting me to Manchester? Where am I going? It was pretty rogue. But I just turned to the guy behind me and I was like, I'm sure you don't want to get kicked off this flight. I don't want to get kicked off this flight. They're making moves now to remove us. So
yeah,
you need to decide what we're going to do. Because it's basically I didn't want to sit down. He didn't want to. But it was if we're going to do it, we're both going to do it together kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Definitely.
And he was just not into the idea of sitting down. So it was actually really me who encouraged him to. And I felt basically a coward at that moment. But I was I'm going to see my friend and I really want to go. What should we do kind of thing? So eventually we both sat down. We drove around the runway for a bit, and the head cabin crew came to me again and was like, you don't need to concern yourself with this man or what's happening to him. And I was like, right, but I have eyes and ears, so I am going to concern myself with someone who is saying, please, get off me, don't touch me, and is being physically restrained by 6 people. So I had a chat with her for a bit and said, logistically, how is this going to work? Is he going to be pinned down like that the whole time? What if he needs to go to the bathroom? What if he needs medical assistance? What is the deal here? And she's like, of course he'll be able to go to the bathroom. And the medic is over there, with him. And I was like, oh, right, okay. I was like, can you identify the medic to me? And she was like, yes, it's the woman. And the woman was one of the people who was physically restraining him.
Oh, what in the world? It's literally, it's not funny, of course, but how ridiculous.
Yeah. So I was like, right, okay. So at this point, I was just sat there feeling like not great, to be honest, because I was like, nothing has been achieved here. Like, he's going to be deported. Maybe I should have just let someone drag me off the plane. Like, I was, like, basically reconsidering all of my life choices at this point. I was like, I've really just not done, like, what I intended to do. But it was obviously, like, quite a high-pressure situation. Yeah, so then, you know, we're driving around the runway still, and at some point the captain gets on the, like, radio and does an announcement. He's like, he said something along the lines of, like, passenger safety is, like, very important to us at BA. Somebody at the back of the plane needs to get off.
Ooh, plot twist.
And I was like, what? It was something like that. It was something that, like, did not describe at all, like, what the actual situation was. The people at the front of the plane would not have had a clue what was going on. Based on, like, you know, these announcements that they're making, like, sorry about delay, there's last minute checks of the aircraft, someone needs to get off the plane. Like, it was all just very vague and just not transparent at all. The plane stops, the captain makes the announcement, and I turn around and Lawrence is stood up, and all of the people who were restraining him also stood up. Like, no one is looking like angry or upset, which is, like, obviously not been the case in the past however long this has been going on for. Like, it was a very high pressure situation, and now everyone's kind of, like, stood up smiling like nothing had happened. And then within, like, 5 minutes, everyone, like, all of that group of people gets off the plane. Lawrence said, like, thank you everyone before he got off the plane, and people clapped, like applauded. And I was like, okay, so people, like, even though everyone was, like, being a hater initially, like, people are actually happy that he got off the plane. And then we obviously had a delay because we'd missed our slot, which we would have missed anyway because it took the staff over an hour to get him on the plane. So we would have missed our, like, original flight time anyway. So there was a little delay, but then eventually the plane took off as planned. When we had, like, the extra delay, I think it was, like, the captain said we're going to take off in 45 minutes. So because I knew that we weren't going anywhere, I rang detention action and gave them an update, like, that Lawrence had got off the plane. And they said to me that, like, they might try and put him back on the plane. And I was like, what? I was like, sure, like, even, like, logistically, that just doesn't make sense. So they would try and do that all over again, given, like, literally, you know, how much disruption it's already caused to the flight. So then I was, like, on high alert until the plane actually took off, because I was, like, wondering, are they going to do it again? But they didn't attempt to do that. But yeah, I didn't hear anything about it, like, whilst in Jamaica. I mean, I wrote a Twitter thread, but we can maybe get into that at a different time. I wrote a Twitter thread about what happened, and that got some response on social media. But on the flight back to Gatwick after my holiday, one of the cabin crew who was on my flight on the way to Jamaica was also on my flight on the way back from Jamaica. And right at the end of the flight, she approached me and she was like, hiya, I just want to say that I saw your thread on Twitter, and I wasn't happy with the way that the cabin crew were portrayed in your series of tweets.
That's quite an interesting problem to have in this situation and scenario, I'd say. Not necessarily what I would take issue with, but
yeah, we have to laugh. Yeah, she was not happy with the way that cabin crew were portrayed, and she was saying, like, you know, again, this thing of, like, it's not anything to do with us. Like, she was like, I personally was, like, really upset with the fact that our flight was being used for a deportation, and, you know, I'm not a fan of the current government of the UK, but, like, we're just all doing our jobs. This is how I pay my rent, like, that kind of thing. And I think I said something like, well, you could get a new job. I know that, like, we all have rent to pay, but there are other airlines that don't deport people.
Of course.
There's other airlines that you could go and work for. And I just, the whole thing with BA has been like, this is nothing to do with us.
Hannah, kind of thinking through, you know, what happened when you went to Jamaica and you saw who we now know to be Lawrence Morgan on that plane, about to be deported, being physically restrained by six people. And you might have noticed actually that I didn't really say much in that recording, and that is not very true of me as the yapper that I am. And actually one of the technical issues we had is that my audio was completely warped in the file. And so there might be bits where you kind of hear a pause where I did ask a prompt or a question. But also it cut out some of my own questions and my commentary. So I kind of wanted to ask you a few questions, essentially in the kind of lead up to this plane. It would seem, based on your, you know, interest in immigration and your kind of past background and your studies and the things that you've kind of worked on, and you know, you came on this episode in the past talking about immigration, it was crazy to me that you were on that flight.
Literally.
Out of all the people in all the lands, it was you.
Yeah. I mean, and that is an online conspiracy theory. Like, there's a guy who replied to one of my tweets who said, like, I believe absolutely everything you're saying, apart from the fact that you were accidentally on this flight. He's like, there's no way. And I mean, I haven't replied to, like, anyone on Twitter. Like, I haven't even replied to anyone who sent me, like, a positive message. But I get so frustrated when people say these things, because I just have a mate who lives in Kingston and I wanted a bit of winter sun. Like, I live in Norway and it's like dark 24 hours a day. So I wanted to go and like see Jamaica. Like, I wasn't actually trying to stop anyone from being deported.
No, absolutely. Also, like, the way that they work, like, maybe there are people that are inside giving leaks to, you know, privileged information to the people that they want to. But we don't have any sources like that. So unfortunately, it was just by chance that you were on that flight. And also, even as your friend, like, hearing the story, I was like, oh my gosh, like, of course
this happened. Like, I can't even go on holiday without, like, getting involved in some sort of altercation.
Activism.
Yeah, literally.
But I think you mentioned, obviously, you know, the social media response, shall we say, to what happened. And for me, actually watching, like, the tweets and seeing what people were saying about you, it was actually a bit terrifying, I won't lie, because you can't, as you said, you can't really, there's no real, it doesn't feel like it makes sense to argue back, because a lot of the things are actually, that are being said are actually complete lies. And it's also, I think it's, not that I believe everything I read online, but it's actually taught me that people actually just make things up.
Yeah.
Like, people will just say things, and it's crazy the things that they say, like, some of the comments that were being made. I was like, that's not even true. Like, that's not even fathomable. That's like, from what you have on the internet about your life, that isn't even a conclusion that a logical person could draw. Like, how did you get there? Like, how did we get there? It's crazy to me. My favorite comment, though, for you was that if you don't like it here, then leave. Like, she doesn't live here.
I actually already left, so...
Literally.
Yeah, I think also that is maybe why a lot of people have a problem, is they're like, why are you interfering in stuff that is to do with the UK when you don't live here anymore? And it's like, well, you people love the ideas of like borders and nation states, and I am a British passport holder, and it just so happened that I used that passport to fly from Gatwick to Kingston. So I'm really sorry, but I still, like, I can still vote in the UK general elections. Yeah. Like, I still have rights as a citizen of the UK to get involved.
Also, I think that, like, I don't know, call me woo-woo, but surely we as human beings should be interested in other human beings, like, despite our passports are stamped on and where we're living. And, like, if you see a man on a flight being physically restrained by six security personnel in a compromising position, knowing that you're about to get on, what, a nine and a half, 10 hour flight, I can understand why you'd want to step in. Like, isn't that what most people would do?
Well, out of the hundreds of people on the plane, actually, no. In the end, it was like me and this one guy who was sat behind me, and that was it.
I think it's also important to say that obviously we've recorded some of the things you're going to hear over a year, and this has been ongoing for over a year. So there are things that, you know, weren't known then that are known now at this point in 2024.
I suppose it's good to clarify now that I didn't know anything about this person. All that I could see is that they were being physically restrained by six people, as you said, and they were saying things like, get off me, you're hurting me, like, don't touch me, which was distressing. Like, yeah, I couldn't see how this was going to run. Like, I couldn't see how they're going to physically restrain someone who's clearly in distress for 9 hours on a flight, and we're all just going to sit here and be like, this is fine, like, it's okay for us to sit down for 9 hours and listen to someone who is clearly in distress saying things like, get off me, don't touch me, you're hurting me. There's people who point out that I shouldn't have got involved because I didn't know why he was being deported, but then you can flip that on its head and say, okay, I didn't know anything, so why shouldn't I get involved? Like, it's not about the circumstances, it's about the fact that I arrived onto a plane and saw that this was happening, and I thought, this person's in distress and I want to intervene.
Absolutely. And I think as well, you know, the context of the time, we have these deportations that have happened of people within the Windrush generation that were illegal, that were wrong, that were completely, like, unfounded. And, you know, I'm sure those are the things that were going through your mind as you, like, contacted relevant charities.
Organizations, like solidarity organizations. I read, like, advice online about what you're supposed to do, and then I also called Detention Action to ask them some questions about what I could, if there was anything that I could feasibly do in this situation.
As you said, and knowing probably what you know about things like deportation, they're very final. It's very difficult. It's so, so unlikely that somebody then comes back from a deportation, unless with the kind of Windrush generation, they were, thank goodness, found to be, like, illegal. And actually, even within that, so many people within that generation were actually lost out there in the Caribbean. Like, they weren't found. They had typically had become homeless because of, you know, the situation where you're just dropped off in Jamaica, having not been there since you were a child.
Yeah.
They weren't able to kind of access anything, access help, access the resources that were supposed to be out there for them. And so actually it's quite impossible to get them back, even if it's proved that they actually had a right to be in Britain and in this country. So it is actually completely understandable why it's like a, you know, ask questions first and then do the actions later, as opposed to the kind of, what is it, act first and ask questions later.
Yeah, and I'm quite a practical person, so I'm just like, what can I actually do right now?
Right.
And one other thing I'd like to say is I could hear quite clearly that he had a British accent. I read wrong into the situation because I thought he was from Manchester, but that's obviously me just, like, trying to pretend that everyone I ever meet is from Manchester. But when I heard his accent, I was also like, this is someone who's either been here their whole life or, like, a significant portion of their life, because they sound like my mate. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. It was a Birmingham accent, I'm assuming,
but it wasn't, because I mean, a Brummie accent is pretty recognizable, and I'd
like to think so.
And also my mum's from the Midlands, but I was not, that was not coming through for me, so he sounded more northern, but I was like, this is a person who belongs to the UK,
right? Yeah. Absolutely. And has been here enough to have an accent that suggests he's been here for a long time. Right. I want to talk a little bit more about kind of what happened on social media, you know, following the incident. You spoke a little bit about on the plane back and the conversation you had with the flight attendant, sort of the thread you made on the social media site X. Talk to me a little bit about that.
First of all, this is, like, probably the wildest thing that's ever happened in my life. And I say that recognizing that I'm not the person who was being deported. Like, obviously, it wasn't necessarily a life-changing day for me, but, like, my adrenaline and heart rate after that, like, for almost the whole plane journey like didn't really calm down. I spent a lot, like at least an hour or two, the first hour or two of the plane journey, writing down everything that had happened just so that it didn't sort of leave my memory afterwards. And then I sat on it for a few days because obviously I just like got to Kingston, arrived at my friend's house, you know, went around, did holiday things, but then I couldn't like get away, like I felt like I had to say something because it like it was shocking for me and I assume everyone else on the flight that they even do deportations on commercial flights. Like I didn't know that, and that's just something because I'm not read up on it, I didn't think about it. For some reason I would imagine like a plane with like five people on taking off, but I guess that's not what they do. So I just felt like people needed to know that this is something that happened, and if it was to happen to them, then there are steps that you can take to try and intervene in the deportation. Like you have a right as an individual citizen to ask if the person is okay, especially if they're being restrained. Because then I'd started doing some Googling, and there was a guy called Jimmy Mbenga who actually was restrained on a deportation flight, and he didn't make it off the flight alive. So that obviously gave it a different kind of tone for me, and I was like, well, you know, people could lose their lives if the way that they're being restrained is dangerous. So I wrote a Twitter thread, as one, or an X thread as it's called now, just like outlining what happened and then giving some tips of like different organizations to follow to like know more about this. And that went viral. It like had, I think it's had like over 3 million views, and I was a bit like, oh, okay. And then straight away there was obviously people coming in with supportive comments or shocked comments of being like, I didn't know that British Airways would use flights to deport people, you know, this is disgusting, I won't fly with BA again, that kind of thing. And then shortly afterwards, there was comments from more like sort of right wing to far right actors being like, anything from calling me a stupid girl who doesn't know anything and shouldn't have gotten involved, to other things, trigger warning, saying that I deserve to be raped or killed, and everything in between. And very quickly, there was this narrative about deportation attempts that had been obstructed earlier of a Somalian guy who had been charged with rape. So they basically was like, they had taken that and said, you've stopped a rapist from being deported. And at this point, we knew nothing about Lawrence. Like, I didn't even know his name. I knew nothing about him. There'd been nothing in the press. So I didn't know anything about him, didn't know if he was a criminal, like literally didn't know anything. But they took that sort of rape allegation and ran with it. And then, interestingly enough, the Daily Mail or the Mail on Sunday published a story about it, and they called, they didn't name Lawrence because his name wasn't out there, but they said, you know, Hannah has stops the deportation of a Jamaican crook shortly after this failed deportation attempt of a Somali rapist. So then basically most people online are now saying that this guy's a rapist or a murderer from zero evidence.
Yeah, and conflating the two cases.
Yeah.
And holding you as you are responsible for A, it seemed like their criminal activity of the Somali guy, as well as the fact that he hadn't been deported, which controversial, but I'm going to say it. No, I don't think it's controversial, actually, I'm going to say it anyway. I'm just not of the opinion that countries like Somalia, Jamaica in this case, why they should have Britain's criminals. Like, if I just, like, I get, there is obviously immigration laws, and there are what's the word, like terms and conditions to, you know, holding a passport or having a visa or being in this country. Like, I understand that, obviously those are in place, but they're very subjective. It's not everybody that they apply to, it's only certain countries that they apply to, and in most cases it's countries with black and brown people. if we're going to put it plainly, why is it that we have someone that is maybe not born here, but completely raised here, schooled here, grown up in this system, socialized by Britain in all ways, then commits a crime in this country from I would argue, their socialization, who then commits a crime, serves time, bearing in mind, in a UK prison, which arguably, if we believe in our justice system, that should be enough.
Yeah.
Arguably, if our justice system works, then why isn't prison time enough? And if it's not, then, well, what's the point of prison? Is it rehabilitation? Is it punishment? Like, what's the plan here? Why isn't that thing being done? Why then are they given a second sentence of deportation?
Yeah, exactly.
And it frustrates me, because then in some of these cases that I've read since obviously talking to you about this one, you've got people that have children that are now being deported and their children are being left in the UK. Okay, so now you're creating another generation of fatherless children.
Yeah, exactly.
That will be socialised in exactly the same way and potentially have similar outcomes. Like, are we not?
Nothing makes sense. And I think me and you looked into this a long time ago, and it was either if you are like foreign born, as it would be called, or your parents are foreign born and you are sentenced to, was it minimum 1 year?
Yeah.
In prison, afterwards you can be eligible to be deported from the UK.
Absolutely.
So let's say that you're, for example, you are British, Deanna. And I think you have a parent who is not foreign British born. Yes, foreign born, as we're calling
Absolutely.
It. So if you committed a petty crime that had carried a sentence of 1 year, you could then be deported, which, as someone who's lived their entire life in the UK, it sounds absolutely nonsensical to me that could happen to you, but it's in the law. Like, that is the law.
Absolutely. And that's the law that not we've quote unquote signed up for, but that is the state of affairs of this country. But that section of the law is not given to everybody.
Mm-mm.
That deportation clause is not meted out to everybody.
No.
It's the pick and choose that I'm not a fan of. Also, why do you think that these countries want your criminals?
Yeah, that's
the
part.
Have things to worry about.
And also the fact that the people who are being deported usually don't have any ties to the country. So you're just dropping someone off, like, on the tarmac and being like, see you later. Like, there's no plan in place for how this person would reintegrate into society.
And then what happens when they don't reintegrate and they need to feed themselves and live?
It's actually Jamaica's problem now, is what the UK government said.
And in this whole conversation, not to be conflating issues in this episode, but we're talking about things like reparations and, you know, this arrested development that places like the Caribbean have been in because of colonization, enslavement, and all this, that kind of historical period. We now are at a point where there's a brain drain. I think Jamaica is like the second worst country for the brain drain in terms of people that are qualified and have higher levels of education and degrees are leaving because of employment issues. They just can't get jobs out there and are choosing to live in Canada, the US, or maybe even Britain. Then also you're sending back people that have been charged of committing crimes in this country. So it's just like, what do you want for them? And it's like this idea that, oh, who cares? It's Jamaica.
Yeah.
Well, like, you care when you want to go there on a nice holiday and sit in a resort. So maybe that's conflating a few issues, but I do have a problem with that policy personally. And maybe I need to just become a politician to change it. I don't know if anyone's going to vote for me like that.
Well, in the current climate, no, actually, no one would vote for that.
Not at all. Not at all. Right. So that was kind of what was happening on social media. But did this impact you in actual real life? Like, you know, outside of you being able to just log off?
Yeah. I mean, it's also hard to log off, unfortunately. Right. I'm also the type of person who feels like I need to be on, like, I need to know what's going on. Because, like, there's other people who would be like, oh, just don't look at it. But I feel actually more safe if I know what people are saying about me online. But there was an in-person element in this fact that the Daily Mail sent a journalist to my registered address in Norway, which unfortunately for my partner's parents is actually their address. So I was at work one Friday morning, and it was about 9 o'clock, and my mother-in-law called me and she was like, hi, how are you? And you know when someone rings you and like in their voice you can tell that something's wrong? So immediately I'm like, oh no, what's happened? So I was like, yeah, I'm fine, how are you? And she was like, I'm fine, but there's a Daily Mail journalist sat in our kitchen. And I went, there's a what in the where in the what? And she was like, yeah, there's a Daily Mail journalist, this is her name. By the way, notice how I will never like out this journalist, and I don't actually know why. Well, there's several reasons why. This is going to go off on a tangent, but it's because I think that it's a young woman and I think that they just do whatever their editors tell them to do.
Yeah,
I don't need to get into a whole thing about how nobody should work for the right-wing tabloid press, but you know, if that's how you want to make your money, that's how you want to make your money. But notice how I have had this person's name for a year now and I will never just, you know, say it in public. Anyway, it's just something about respect there. So this young female journalist was at my parents-in-law's kitchen table. And she was like, where's Hannah? And they were like, who are you? By the way, I don't live there anymore. But if you knew where I lived, it is like the back of beyond the middle of nowhere. Like nobody goes there. As in the population is, of the entire municipality is 2,000 people. So she rocks up and is like, can I speak to Hannah? And they're like, no, she doesn't live here, but you can come in for a cup of tea, which is so British. Oh, so then, so they obviously alert me to the fact that she's there, and I'm like, don't tell her where I work. Like, I don't want to talk to her. Like, my answer is no comment. So they basically told her to go, but the whole thing was really weird because they were like, well, you ventured awfully far to get here. And she was just like, no, I was just popping round. But nobody pops round, because as in, she would have had to fly to Bergen and drive, like rent a car and drive for 3 hours to get there. So no one is actually popping round. Like, you don't, you know, get on a train to Gatwick Airport, get on a plane to Bergen and then drive for 3 hours by accident. Nobody does that.
It's not a pop-in place.
No, it's not a pop-in. Like, I'm not just popping in for a cup of tea. Anyway, no. So then I found this person's details online. I found them on Twitter. I asked for her WhatsApp number. And then I sent a message on WhatsApp saying, hiya, you've seen everything I have to say. There's a 30-tweet thread on Twitter/X. I have been severely damaged mentally by the things that people are saying about me online. People think that I should be dead or be raped because of what I've supposedly done. So I would appreciate it if you left me alone. And she said, no worries, like obviously no, like no harm intended, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, what else would you intend? Because the thing is, these people do have a responsibility to tell you that they're coming to the country that you're living to, you know, what they wanted to do is doorstep me. They wanted me to open that door that day and be so freaked out that they were at my address and that they had the power to do that, that I would tell them something. Like, they probably wanted me to say, like, fuck off, so that they could write, you know, Hannah's a very angry person. Or whatever in the Mail on Sunday. So that's what happened.
That was insane. That was insane. Sorry, just for context, when did all of this happen?
This happened at the end of November. So it was the same month. It was probably like a week after I got back from Jamaica. They came to find me.
Wow. And then you had your feature, if I'm correct, in the tabloid press, in two.
I've been in the Mail on Sunday in print, the SUN, which nobody should ever buy. We don't support those people. The Sin, as I like to call it, the Express, and then some lesser known publications that the far right like to read, who shall not be named.
Right. And again, imprint is crazy, partly because I couldn't tell you the last time I picked up an imprint newspaper. That's probably more about my
I can't
generation.
Tell you the first time.
Really? A little Metro on the bus?
Yeah, that's actually right. School. When we were going to school, we would read the Metro because there was nothing else to do.
And that was more just because, like, it's on my seat now, so I picked it up and here we are. Anyway, so I can imagine that was quite insane to see all that. And also, it is then not only, obviously, you've put the thread out and a certain demographic of the population have picked that up and run with it, but it being in print, it then opens it up to another demographic of people that aren't probably on social media that are now reading this in print and then adding in their 10 cents that is completely inaccurate and false to the narrative, and especially conflating these issues of the Somali man that was convicted of rape and the deportation attempts with all of that.
It does need to be emphasised, though, that the Daily Mail picked up, like, their story was created by the far right, because the far right were talking about this. Well, I don't know. I guess it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, like it just goes round and round. But I'm not a reader of the tabloid press, so I don't know. But I imagine that this story about the Somalian guy had been in the press recently, and that's why the people in the Twitter comments were talking about it. But then, after that, the Daily Mail referred to that story in their story, which I thought was wild that all of these, like, everyone's talking about the same thing. But I guess it's because I'm not in those spaces, so I wasn't aware of it.
That's absolutely, that's their echo chamber. They're the things that are kind of key newsreel points. But yeah, it is very interesting because it's not like, I think deportations probably happen more than we are aware. And obviously not all cases make it to the front page or into the newspaper. Some of them happen probably without a hitch and just happen. So as you've said, it's interesting that that case in particular is the one that's being conflated because there was an attempt and it failed. And because they knew the kind of background of this person and who he was. Now with the case of Lawrence, they, for a long time, it seemed in the press. And I hated the fact that I had to kind of, I didn't read any of the press. I refused to even give it clicks because I think a lot of the headlines rely on the kind of clickbaity titles and they want the clicks, and that's how a lot of media runs these days. And it's really unfortunate, actually, because it's really stopping a lot of really good journalism from happening. But we did later on find out who the Home Office were trying to deport on the flight that you stopped it on, or you were kind of, and I don't even know if you stopped it, but
we can actually talk about that though, because I think
the likelihood is, well, tell us, like, was it you?
It wasn't me, as in I sat down, like, me and the guy in the room behind me were like, okay, we're gonna sit down because we're not trying to get, like, the police to come and drag us off the flight. And then the plane carried on, like, driving around the tarmac. So I thought, all right, we're taking off now. And unfortunately, this person's been deported. Like, that's it. And then the plane stops and he got off. And I think what's wild is that, obviously, because the Daily Mail story came out and put me as, like, the poster child, like, I led a mutiny on board, which also, like, is given, like, there was, like, knives and pirates and, like, do you know what I mean? That's not what happened. I thought that he was being deported and then suddenly he wasn't. And, I mean, no one is going to believe this, but I'm going to say it anyway. The journalist from The Guardian that I've been talking to for a really long time about this was sat on a delayed train from London to, I think, Manchester, and ended up sitting next to a guy who was like, oh, I can't believe this is delayed. Like, I've literally just got off a flight from the Caribbean. I'm a pilot, rare. And she was like, oh, interesting. Like, do you know about this deportation attempt of Lawrence Morgan? And he was like, yeah, I was the captain on the flight. And she was like, are you joking? And I wasn't there, so I'm just telling you what I've been told. But she was told that it was ultimately his decision to you know, for Lawrence to be taken off the flight. I assume for safety reasons, because when I turned around and there were six people restraining him, none of those people had seatbelts on. And as far as I'm aware, you should have your seatbelt on for the plane to be able to take off. So yeah, and in my thread I didn't say that I was responsible for the plane stopping. I just talked about what happened, and in the thread I said that the plane was driving around the tarmac and I thought, oh well, we're taking off now. So the fact that the Daily Mail decided that it was me and only me, Hannah Gaffey, is actually the pilot. I am the captain now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is me. That's what they said. So the only people who've been peddling this lie that I was a person responsible for stopping the plane is the Daily Mail.
And it's interesting that as they, the way that they printed as well, the article in print was like pictures of you in like the picture of you was bigger than the picture of the plane. It was like the Hannah show. And considering you weren't being deported, I just felt it was very interesting that you
as in they said that I'm bigger than a plane.
Like, bigger, badder. Like, the biggest and the baddest.
Multiple
pictures of you, great pictures, I might add.
Stunning, yeah.
Like, showcasing the knitwear, showcasing...
Yeah, as in it was actually free marketing for my knitting Instagram.
I love that. But yeah, it was, the conflation was wild, and it just literally like plays into the hands of that group of people, into the far right, into kind of this idea that one person that's trying to, you know, stand up for what they think is right in this situation is to blame for all of Britain's crime and immigration issues.
That was
like and it there is never, even if we pick a politician, pick our least favourite one, there's never one person to blame for any of Britain's issues. It is long-term policies, changes, shocks and turns of the climate and whatever else. So the fact that they had conflated that with you was disgusting, actually. And it's actually crap journalism, if you ask me. Not to say that I'm the world's best broadcaster, but there's a level and there's a limit. And they clearly just cross it every time. But we know they do. And that's why we don't engage with... papers like that and fund them and click them. And in fact, actually, top tip, if you don't want to engage with them, literally block and mute them on your social media.
That's all a good
their
one.
Pages. I've blocked and mute them also. It's actually funny that I wasn't actually seeing on my Twitter the backlash that you were getting in full, because I had all of those pages blocked and mute. And I remember having to painstakingly unmute some of them to see what was happening. And I remember seeing them later on and being like, wait, I thought I blocked you. I thought you were gone. And then I having to like re-block and mute them, because it's the only way for them not to come up, because they are Twitter profile or X profile.
Yeah.
So you can block and mute them, and you can even block and mute them in your search engines, like a safe search, like take them off like unsafe content.
Yeah. Also, if they ever run a story about you and use your photos from the internet, you can get money for those, because they're not allowed to use them because they don't have the copyright. And it doesn't matter how many emails you have to send, you will eventually get your money. You can just say that you're going to take them to the small claims court, and then they're like, oh, no. Really interestingly, we don't need to get into this, but... like the two tabloids that I went after trying to get money from them, one of them straight away was like, yeah, our bad, here's the money. And the other one was like, I had to send email after email after email, and they were not going to give me the money.
Obviously, in November 2023, when, you know, this all happened on the plane, you didn't know anything about the man that they were trying to deport, bar his accent, which you thought was Northern. Obviously, now we know him to be Lawrence Morgan, and it has come out that, and I think probably early this year, 2024, that he had convictions for firearm and drug offences. And so when did you like find all this out?
I think the night before the story came out, it was another... story on, it was either in the Mail on Sunday or the Daily Mail, and it was actually the front page story. So Mark Hookham, the editor, contacted me the night before, and I think I was at work, and he was like, hiya, this is being published in the morning, like, here's some questions, just like giving you an opportunity to respond. And I didn't respond because I've spoken to like PR people who I know from uni, and their advice when dealing with the tabloids is just to not say anything because they will twist your words. So I didn't even reply saying no comment. I just ignored the messages. Also because, I don't know why they were trying to make the story about me when it was, they were just revealing Lawrence's crimes, basically. But that story also revealed that he came to the UK when he was 6 years old, and has been, you know, living, studying, working in the UK since then, like grew up here.
That which would have been, I believe he was 27 at the time, so 21 years in the UK, the first six in Jamaica. I guess it speaks to what kind of I was arguing before about the fact that people are kind of raised in this country, socialized in this country, take on all the values, good and bad, of this country, and do whatever they choose to do next, but then are sent to Jamaica to quote-unquote be dealt with.
I don't know what his sentence was. Again, all of this information is available online if you want to Google it, but he, as we spoke about before, he would have already been in prison. Deportation is like an extra punishment just for the fact that he wasn't born in the UK.
Absolutely. And that's, I think that's probably one of my biggest issues. It's like a double punishment.
Mm.
I think it's quite interesting at the way that, as we've said, the kind of far right pick up this story, and then we kind of get into summer 2024, the election, where 14% of voters voted for reform.
Mm.
Who are, in my eyes, a party that's kind of run on an immigration ticket, and very little else. I don't know what their policies are about the environment. I don't know what their policies are about education. I don't know anything else. All I know is the things that they say about immigrants and immigration. But kind of looking at the summer that we've just had in Britain with quote-unquote protests.
We can call them race riots.
Race riots, exactly what they are. Thank you. You said it, not me. No, I'm joking. I've as you know, listeners, I've done a few episodes on the events of this summer, so we're not going to rehash everything that has happened. But just wondered how you feel about kind of the incident now and the kind of follow up of it in the context of having had the summer that we saw in the UK.
I think there's not been enough condemnation from political leaders about what's happened, and it feels like we just forgot about it. Like, it was almost a full month of people just sort of going wild and doing whatever they wanted on the streets. And I think before we get into it, I'd also like to flag that for the families of those three little girls who were murdered, this does nothing for them. Like, if anything, they're going to look back at these events, you know, when it's the anniversary of their deaths every year, and think, oh my goodness, like, I can't believe that we had to deal with people in our names, because the people who were going out and bricking mosques and setting fires to asylum seeker hotels were doing that in the names of those three little girls. And the families have openly condemned that behaviour and say that they don't agree with it. But imagine being those people, and every single year, that's what you're reminded of.
Mm. And like that being the legacy of your daughter's death, and it being such a tragic thing. And I hate the fact that, to a point, I even forgot that's where it started.
Yeah,
because it spiraled so much. And actually, we should have been having vigils, and there were in the kind of immediate aftermath for these young girls. They, you know, they should have been really, really remembered in a really peaceful, to kind of counter the tragic way they lost their lives. But actually, it was turned into this farce, because, as you said, it does nothing for any of them.
People were basically like, I've got a vigil at 5 p.m. but at 8 p.m. I'm gonna go and brick a mosque. Like, that is what people were doing. And the thing that has really struck me is there was so many parallels between what had happened with the deportation attempts and the media response to that and what's happening now, in terms of like the far right environment, I guess is what you want to say, because a lot of like, the reason that all of this spiraled is misinformation. They said that the person who killed those three girls was a Muslim. So then people decided, okay, we're going to go and brick mosques. We're going to set fire to mosques. Anyone who we see who we think is Muslim, whatever that means, yeah. we're going to throw bricks at their car. We're going to, like, surround their cars and start bashing them with things. Mm. So this misinformation led to a targeting specifically of Muslim people and places of worship. And that was just not handled. Like, I feel like the problem nowadays, especially when we have people like Elon Musk being in charge of big social media platforms like X, there seems to be, for me anyway, there's no like reporting or monitoring of false information or of abuse. Like, I would report tweets where people are saying, like, you should die. And then I'd report it, and then the report would come back like, there's nothing wrong with this content. And it's like, well, no, there obviously is. And I think, like, and during that time, actually, when the riots were happening, Elon Musk was, like, at him, the new Labour government, and being like, why are you, like, restricting people's freedom of expression? And it's like... So now he is going one step further as the owner of this platform and using it to egg on the far right for them to do more egregious things, basically.
Absolutely. It's, I think, definitely a case where these platforms need to be policed a little bit more, in a sense. But speaking of policing and the policing of those people that were caught up with the riots over the summer, it has been the case that Keir Starmer's government has been like, you know, they're gonna feel the rule of law. They're gonna, you know, have really tough sentences. And I just wondered, you know, what your thoughts might be on the way that it was handled, like, from a policing standpoint.
Yeah, I think that, like, throwing people in prison might deter others from doing the same things. But how are we actually going to tackle the root of this problem? Like, why are people going out and doing this? And I think also on the prison thing, it's kind of you're fulfilling people's self-fulfilling prophecy, which is you can't say anything these days, you can't do anything, like, you're going to get thrown in prison just for, like, protesting for your rights, because people see that, they saw that as a protest. And it's the same thing with, like, Donald Trump in the US. Like, he's saying, if they put me in prison, it's because it's a conspiracy against me. So I feel like by actually putting people in prison, you're reinforcing, even if it's not true, even if it's fake news, even if it's whatever, you're still reinforcing their mindset that everyone is against me. And I think we need to go, like, why are people so threatened by immigration? We're not going to go massively into it because we've done a podcast episode about this before, but people who seek asylum in this country don't have lavish lifestyles as much as people think they might do. Again, please go and listen to that episode. So, yeah, the thing is, all of this is caused by misinformation, because what we've talked about previously is that people, you know, asylum seekers get to live in hotels, they get this amount of money each week, they get this, they get that, they get more benefits than, you know, ethnically born British people. It's all bollocks, to be honest with you. So we need to, like, it's about telling people the truth. And also, I think for our elected officials, it's about saying, actually, the reason that you've not got a job is because of this. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're going to get into this more later, but I feel like we need to address a root cause instead of throwing people in prison. And actually, the thing that's the most troubling for me personally is when I was watching the videos of the riots, is some of these kids are like 12, 13, 14. Yeah. And like, what are you going to do? Like, what are we going to do about that? Like, that is absolutely horrific, especially if they get in prison and that's something on their record. As a like child, like, and how are they getting into that situation? Like, our mum and dad being like, we're going out to protest, or we're going on a riot, or we're gonna go and throw bricks at a mosque? Or are they doing it by themselves? Are they doing it with their mates because they actually want to go and, like, rob a pair of trainers from Foot Asylum? Like, what do you know what I mean? Like, what is it? Absolutely. So I think that needs to be addressed as well.
Definitely the ages. That was a scary thing for me. The youngest was 11, I believe, and I think the oldest was either 71 or 81. And it just spoke to this idea that, like, racism and kind of this kind of rhetoric is always seen as something that is of the older generation.
Mm.
But actually seeing essentially kids who, I'm sorry, at 11, I knew nothing. I was an idiot. Everything I probably knew was from my parents. It was from the people that raised me. So I personally can't hold an 11-year-old to this standard of understanding what they're doing. Obviously, I don't know the circumstances of the way that they were taken to the riots or the way that they went. It's the summer holidays. A lot of kids have actually just got nothing to do because they closed down all the youth centres and all the kind of activities and the funding for the arts that might have them involved in something better in the summer than flipping riots. But actually, the fact that you've got kids that young that are being raised on this rhetoric, it's continuing. You know, like the fact that BNP becomes UKIP, becomes Reform, these new iterations of the same thing and the same views and the same ideology in a different time context just keep coming back, clearly show it's a bigger problem. And I'm seeing it as well in the US with a lot of the rhetoric around different immigrant groups.
I mean, that the immigrants are eating dogs and cats.
They're eating dogs and cats, specifically Haitians. Yeah, because obviously that's what they like to eat. Ridiculous. But it's just blaming a set of people that you probably know little about, and you can drum up some fear in the population for the issues of the country that you were in charge of, that you were running 4 years ago, sir. That was all you. Okay, anyway, enough about that, man. I wanted to, you know, maybe think about the future and potentially positively looking forwards, or just looking forwards generally. Yeah. We do have a change of government since all of this happened. I remember, I think it was James Cleverly that called out you do-gooders.
Right, so me and James Cleverly actually have personal beef. And so he specifically called out do-gooder whatever we are, and that was actually at me. And then I know that at the time he was in charge of the Home Office when all of this stuff was happening with Lawrence. And yeah. I mean, we forgot to mention that unfortunately Lawrence has since been deported from the UK in February this year. I kind of knew a bit behind the scenes what was going on because I'd been in touch with some journalists and lawyers who were in touch with Lawrence and some of his family members. But from what I've been told, the case, because it had been on the front page of the Daily Mail and a lot of people were getting riled up about it, it had been, it had been like ascended to like the highest levels of British government, and that's how pressed they were to get him out of the country. So I believe that James Cleverly personally worked on this case again. And the reason why I think that this is true is because after the deportation, one of the tabloids wrote about it, and then James Cleverly tweeted the link to that to say, look, I'm being tough on foreign criminals, because that's like his whole shtick. So I just personally like to say to James Cleverly, I'm really glad that you've lost the Tory leadership contest, and I hope that you take some time to go away and think about that in your own private time that you have now.
Thank you very much, Miss Gaffey, for your closing comments. So obviously, Huntley, sorry, you kind of just dropped that in, that Lawrence has now been deported, and it's part of the reason why this episode didn't come out earlier this year when we kind of had planned it to, because it was very much a case of, you know, will it happen, won't it happen, he's on a plane, it might happen, it might not. So obviously this was something that was real life, and it was going to impact someone's actual life.
Yeah.
Like, as much as we've spoken about kind of your situation, because you were made to be the poster child of this deportation, actually, as you said, you know, it wasn't your deportation, and it was way worse for Lawrence, I'm sure, than for you.
Exactly. But, and these deportations, you know, no matter what the circumstances are, destroy people's lives. Like, imagine you've come to a country as a six-year-old, it's all really you've ever known, and then you're dropped into another country, in this case Jamaica, where you don't have any connections, and you have, you know, no job, no anything. In February this year Lawrence was deported, and the Home Office used a North Atlantic Airways flight It wasn't to Jamaica. It wasn't to Kingston, was it? I can't remember. Was it to like Montego Bay? Yeah. So they used a holiday flight to Montego Bay to deport him, and they got the armed police involved. So there was armed police on the tarmac. They also booked out half the seats on the plane. In the back half of the plane, so that nobody, I guess, could get involved. No do-gooders could get involved. Do-gooders
could mutiny.
There was no mutiny. There were no do-gooders, because I'm very sure that the people at the front of the plane had no idea what was going on, because, you know, these planes are huge. If you've been on a charter flight, like, they're absolutely massive. He was unfortunately deported, and me and Deanna watched the flight take off on like one of those live flight tracker things, and he's been in Jamaica since then.
Yeah. And I think within that, the fact that they took up so much of the plane to ensure, essentially, and as I remember James Cleverly tweeting about it pretty much immediately, maybe a week or so after that had happened. And Norse Airways is marketed, especially for me, someone that goes back to Jamaica quite often, as like a cheaper alternative to get to Jamaica on a holiday one, last minute, summer sun, £200 flights. I remember when they launched the route to Jamaica, actually, they literally had influencers on the flight, like, yeah, you know, like, we paid £300 to go to Jamaica, which is, for anybody that doesn't ever fly to Jamaica, average prices are around, I'd say, £800. In peak seasons, it can go to £1,500. Typically, a good deal on a flight to Jamaica is about £500-600. I would be okay with paying that. I'd be happy, should I say, paying that. So the fact that they're bringing these prices all the way down to £300 is crazy. And people always bring up Norse to me, because it's a route I do quite often. And they're like, oh yeah, but you can get the Norse flight for like £300. And I always say to them, yeah, because they're deporting people on them. They don't have to charge you a lot, because they're charging the Home Office. And we haven't actually spoken about how much it would cost the Home Office to book out half a plane.
Yeah, I actually can't even do the maths. That's a lot of thousands.
Right? Hundreds of thousands, because we haven't even, A, counted the cost that they're charging these private security companies. Mm. High levels of police, as you said in the second attempt, as well as, I'm sure, the kind of extra security holding someone in detention that's already served a prison sentence.
Yeah.
All of this kind of intermediary holding of a person that you want to deport, the cost of that on the taxpayer. And this is where it like really pisses me off, because I'd say the majority of people that took to the streets in this summer have discontent in their lives, and rightly so. Heating bills are ridiculous. Food bills are ridiculous. Enjoyment is just non-existent in this country. It's cold as hell. Like, there is very little at the moment that it seems to get happy about. And all of these things, if you want to point a finger, an immigrant is seemingly the easy place to point your finger.
Yeah.
Actually, you've got a government that are spending extortionate amounts of money on deportations. Why not just have a better prison system that actually
you could just let someone go out and live their life that costs nothing for the government.
In fact, they would pay taxes. Yeah, they would be contributing to
they
society.
Might even get a job and pay taxes. Yeah, but instead you're spending, I don't even know, but I would say in the hundreds of thousands to deport one person
easily. And we could talk about how much they spent on something that didn't even happen, Rwanda.
I have the figures. I've got the receipts. So this is something from the Migration Observatory, and it says, publicly available information suggests that as of July 2024, at least £318 million has been spent on the Rwanda scheme.
My gosh.
And that's something that didn't even happen.
Are you optimistic at all, now that we have a change in government, about how that might impact immigration policy?
Well, I don't think it can get any worse than like the last 15 years.
We're at rock bottom.
But at the same time, they want to be saying that they're tough on immigration. But it's also the same as which Labour was it who had like the British jobs for British people? You know, the UK is very socially conservative, like as a country, and apparently that means xenophobia and racism to some people. So I don't know if the conversation around immigration is going to become more positive. What I would actually really love is if a politician from genuinely any party would get up on a stage somewhere or in Parliament or on social media or anywhere and say, immigration is normal, people move. As in, people move in and out of this country every single day.
Yeah.
Like, and also talk about the benefits of immigration. And I mean, yeah. I have some really dry statistics I can read out to you. But I mean, I know that both me and you don't really like to justify why immigrants should exist. Like, yeah. I am an immigrant in Norway, and I don't feel like I need to justify my existence. Like, I'm coming here. I'm actually an economic migrant. Like, I'm coming to Norway because I will be paid more in Norway than I would have been in the UK. And yeah. that's like a personal decision that I've made. And I don't think that anyone anywhere should be like, I'm going to make life really hard for you because you've come to this country to make a better life for yourself. Like, and that's how I feel about people who move to the UK as well, under any circumstances. Yeah. But I can read out some dry things if you want. I've got a report from the Migration Observatory at the University of Oxford, and it was a report that was published in June 2024 called Migrants in the UK Labour Market, an overview. And it says unemployed migrants are less likely to claim benefits, like unemployment benefits, than unemployed people born in the UK, which obviously disproves this, you know, people come here and just want to take money from the state and don't want to work. Untrue. Foreign-born workers more likely to work during night shifts and in non-permanent jobs. Like, you know, people who come to the UK are more likely to just take the job and do the job that needs to be done more than a UK-born person. This is the last one. Migrant men are more likely to be employed than UK-born men in 2022, but more migrant women were less likely to be in employment, which can easily be explained by child caretaking duties. But again, I don't like to justify the existence of immigration and why it's like a normal thing, but even the statistics are saying that immigration isn't bad for the UK, and people who come to the UK as immigrants, they're not lazy, they're not just trying to claim benefits, they're not this, they're not that.
Yeah.
So I would actually just like, instead of the, I feel like in the UK, the entire conversation about immigration is stopping immigration, reducing immigration, getting rid of it. There's no conversation to be had, apparently, about how it's fine. Like, it's fine that people move.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's that other quote about, like,
we are here because you were there?
That one.
We are, unfortunately. And even though Clement Attlee said when the Windrush arrived that they won't even survive a winter, 3 generations later, we're still here, suckers. We're not going anywhere. Like, Britain is that like, Britain is brown.
Does that mean
black,
like
Britain is mixed?
Black people can't survive the cold. What was that? Is that
apparently? Apparently not. But also it was this, and but it speaks to this idea that you were saying, that they're work shy, that they won't be able to do it. They won't be able to get outside and work. They won't be able to do the shit jobs that you're going to give them. No, they did. They did
actually,
it.
And held and up like here. The NHS and other public services.
Anyway. Oh,
meanwhile.
As you've importantly said, and I will stress, like, I hate the contribution conversation. I hate it. Like, Windrush Day, oh, the contribution of Caribbean migrants to Britain. I hate it. I hate it so much. Like, what? We're humans.
Why can't people just exist? Like, why can't people just exist without having to, like, prove themselves?
Exactly.
I want to talk about something that's a little bit worrying.
Okay.
Which is obviously one of the things that Labour first did was scrap the Rwanda plan, which, you know, the bar is in hell, but that's a good first step. And I think, as well as it being completely inhumane, like, why would you process people who've applied for asylum in the UK in Rwanda? It doesn't make sense. It was completely an unworkable solution. And as we've discussed, it was a huge cost to taxpayers. And then it never actually happened. So they have said that, which is good. Like, we're getting rid of the Rwanda plan. They keep doing this thing where they talk about cracking down on criminal gangs. And this is in relation to the gangs that operate across Europe and elsewhere, getting, like, smuggling people who are usually asylum seekers into the UK, for example. But, like, no one is ever going to stop coming to the UK. Like, it does not matter how many criminal gangs you crack down on. Like, you put someone in prison and then like their brother or their mate will come in their place. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's a, that's a bit of an unworkable solution. What we actually need to do is get, is have a legal route to asylum, because currently that doesn't exist. I have another thing from a report, and it's that as of April 2023, only 22 people have been resettled in the UK under Pathway 2 of the Afghan Citizens Resettlement Scheme, otherwise known as the ACRS, which launched in January 2022. This is currently the only open route for resettlement for Afghans not already in the UK. Mm-hmm. And what I'm basically trying to say is, so we don't need to just go into this. There's another podcast episode on this. But if you want to claim asylum in the UK or any other country, you have to have 2 feet on the ground. Okay. Like, you can't apply from outside the country. So if there's no legal route, like, how are you going to get, like, we live on an island. So how are you going to get onto the UK other than by crossing on a boat? Because usually people who are fleeing war and conflict don't have all their papers in order to, you know, like, for example, now in Gaza, like, what, how are you going to the embassy? The answer is you're actually not, it doesn't exist. So you have to cross land borders in order to get out. So what I would like to see, because this bill that came in last year, the illegal migration bill, as it's called, or the so-called illegal migration bill, as some people call it, that basically removed, like, people's rights to seek asylum in the UK. So what the UK government now, that is led by Labour, needs to do is to go back and look at that legislation and basically peel it back and say, okay, you know, regardless, people are going to arrive in this country regularly or irregularly. I'm using air quotation marks because I don't really believe in irregular or illegal migration. But okay, people are still going to cross the border and arrive, so what are you going to do with them? But what's quite interesting is Keir Starmer has been to see Giorgia Meloni, the Prime Minister of Italy, and also the leader of the Brothers of Italy, which is a party with neo-fascist roots. And the UK has sent £4 million to Italy to support their crackdown on irregular migration. So they're going to send their like people, their migrants, as we're calling them, they're going to send their migrants to Albania. So they're also doing offshore processing, and it's actually an idea that's like sweeping Europe. And in general, you know, Europe is becoming more right wing. In a lot of cases, it's becoming very far right, and people are becoming very insular and just wanting to shut off their borders. Like, Germany announced like a week or two ago that they're shutting off their, like, there's not really going to be free movement into Europe anymore. So Schengen is also, I don't want to say getting shut down, but Schengen is being reduced. And then France have said, oh, Germany are going to do more checks on the borders and not have free movement. We're going to do that too, because we're allowed to, because they've done it. So I think, like, basically, it seems like everyone's becoming very insular, and it's not very like, let's all hold hands and love each other. It's very like, I'm an independent person, I'm an independent country, I'm an, you know what I mean? It's like, don't actually, like, we're not doing collaboration, we're not doing working together, we're all just going to be on our own. And I think, as we can see, the things that are happening in the world today mean that really we can't all just be our own individual people. Like, we all need to love and care for each other. So I would like, you know, I mean, it's not very British to be like, we're all gonna love each other and care. You know, it's not very stiff of a lip, but I would actually like someone in leadership to be like, we're stronger together, let's fix this.
Absolutely. Which is something I'm seeing more from, like, the other side of the world, like the Caribbean, who are trying to kind of get together a little bit more, but most, like, in most contexts, to kind of beat the kind of impact of climate change, especially in that region. But as you said, there are so many things. I'm touch wood, we don't ever, but pandemics, like, will we see them again? Climate change and the kind of issues that flooding and all the natural disasters that are going to come because of that, as a result of that. We need global systems that we can work through together. And as you said, this kind of like ethno-nationalism, I think it's called. I've been doing my reading, and this kind of idea that, you know, countries are for one specific group and everybody else just needs to make it work there or get out, if you can even get there, is not really an approach that makes sense to me personally, and maybe you either. We've spoken a lot.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The editing is actually going to be wild.
No, it's okay. We've spoken a lot about a lot of important things. We've spoken a lot, I want to say, about a few different types of immigration.
Yeah, and I know that I make it confusing because I always want to talk about, like, illegal immigration. So maybe...
We have gone through different types of immigration. There are obviously on case-by-case bases why each of these have different outcomes and require different, like, strands of the law. So whilst we have kind of jumped between immigration types today, obviously understand that they are different, and not to conflate them all, but I think they all speak to one bigger issue of immigration as a whole, which is why I think it's fine for us to speak about them kind of together, as much as they are different, very much different. But yeah, I don't know if you have anything more you want to add to this episode. That might be two episodes because we've said so many things.
No, I think last time when we recorded this in January, I said that everyone should register to vote, but we've done that now. But I think coming back to like the riots this year, one thing that I think is really important, and I say this all the time to people, so Deanna's probably heard this like a million times and that's fine, but it's that we have to call out any type of discrimination, whether it be like racism, xenophobia, transphobia, etc., etc., when we see it, even if it's like a small thing and people say that it's a joke, haha. Because like, I'm sure that if you're listening to this, you have that one uncle who, like, you know, shares stuff on Facebook and you're like, oh, like that's that's actually not funny, like it's a meme. Like, I've seen, like, memes of Rishi Sunak when he became prime minister, and it was, like, his, it was, like, the House of Parliament as, like, a Londis or, like, a corner shop, basically, because they're being, like, you know, Asians can only run corner shops, like, they can't run the country. Yeah. And, like, even small things like that, which is, I don't want to say that it's not very offensive because it's not true, but it's not, like, it's not using a racial slur, for example, but I would say it's a microaggression and it's discriminatory and it's disgusting. I think we have to be the people who don't necessarily call it out, because I've learned from experience it doesn't work, but say, like, I will comment on stuff like that and say, oh, like, why is this funny? Like, I don't get the joke. And then people obviously can't explain why it's funny. So I think we need to be, like, standing up for these things, even in the small things, because by creating a culture where, like, have we actually created a culture where it's okay to brick a mosque? Like, that's concerning to me. Right. And I think maybe if in those communities there's people who's like, like, when someone makes a racist joke, is like, oh, I don't get it. Like, why is that funny? Like, and that kind of thing. I think we just have to stand up against people who are being bigoted, basically.
Yeah.
So that's my end note, and that's my piece of advice, is like, and I also know that it's not easy, like, not all of us have like guardian reading parents who are like super hashtag woke or do-gooders or whatever, you know, people want to say. Like, we have very different life experiences, and it's hard when everyone around you is saying things that you completely disagree with, but at the end of the day, like, you just have to stand on your business and like say what you want to say, and I think instead of coming at it from a point of like, you can't say that, that's really wrong, you can say, it really upsets me actually when you say those things, and coming at it more from like an emotional angle, and maybe that works, maybe it doesn't.
Maybe. I guess it depends on your family or your but I think you're right, calling things out, you know, if you're uncomfortable, if you're uneasy, say something about it. If you want to do something about it, do something about it. But also, I will add to all of that, and say, be open to have your opinions changed.
Mm.
Be open to being challenged. You know, if you are saying things, whatever they might be and whatever kind of side you're on, like, make sure they're true. Make sure they're factually accurate. Make sure you've got some receipts, because the amount of misinformation in this quote-unquote case alone shows me, like, the amount that we must be consuming by way of misinformation across the board of things that we take in online and in person must be huge. So, yeah, question things, think critically, and be open for your views to be changed.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. If you did want to listen to Hannah's first episode, it's episode 14 of the History Hotline.
Wow, that is an OG episode.
It is. You were the first ever guest. You were.
Wow.
And you might be the last ever guest. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. I hope you all have a wonderful week. Bye.
Peace out. See ya.
Bye-bye.